If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my good, close, long-time personal friend, mentor, compadre, amigo, Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Just kind of 5 weeks in, lockdown is starting to feel normal.
A lot of it is starting to feel normal. I mean, even, I don't know what it's like where you are, but a lot of places up here that had... you know, a lot of restaurants and stuff that had closed are now reopening for delivery and takeaway. So even if there's somewhere that you missed, you know, grabbing brunch from or something, like, you can now go and pick stuff up. So most of the stuff that you can get, I mean, is there. I mean, the only two things that I miss, I could do is getting a haircut. That would be good. And then also, you know, not being able to go to the gym is a bit of a pain in the ass. But that's, I mean, when that's your only real complaints, you're not doing too bad.
You're not doing too bad at all. Not doing too bad at all. I've had two haircuts since the lockdown began.
Via yourself?
No. My other half, she had a bash at it again on Sunday. So, yeah, it looks all right. I don't think I'll be putting a picture of myself online. It's not that good, but it looks better than it did.
What a backhanded compliment to give her. Oh, it looks really good. Not good enough to put online, of course, but it looks good nonetheless.
But I do know what you mean about getting back to the hairdressers, and yeah, I am looking pretty ridiculous if I'm honest. But it's you know, it's a small price to pay, and you know, we'll see what happens with hairdressers. Not quite sure if they're going to be among the first wave of businesses that will be allowed to reopen. Can't see that one myself. Although I did see something on the news of one country where they'd allowed hairdressers to reopen and everyone was wearing a mask. Did you see that item?
Yeah. I did see that, yeah. So my gut says that what we're going to find is by about September, people are going to be back to work and there will be adjustments as to how that happens. So it might be that, you know, gyms open up, but gyms have to have things in place where they can't have more than a certain amount of people in at one time, or if hairdressers the same and they have to figure out ways around doing stuff. And that's really going to be, you know, because if those places aren't thinking about how to do that, then they're not going to get to open soon. And that's kind of where it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, these places, I mean, they've got to reopen at some point. And I mean, were they saying that like tips were going to open this weekend? So a few things, you know, restrictions are slowly being eased. But I think when the review takes place on the, I think it's a week on Thursday the 7th, you would think that something will happen then. And I would think that something will be announced before then, but I mean, we will see. I mean, it's really hard to know. I mean, they've got to get, it's a tricky one, isn't it? It's a very tricky one. Let's not go into the complexities of it, because we kind of understand them, but there's a lot more going on than I think we can really get our heads around. And sometimes, you know, ignorance is bliss, Kenny, I always say.
Ignorance is bliss. Well, the thing is, luckily there's a lot of wrestling news to get us by. We did a special, obviously, over on Patreon for all the releases that happened. By the way, you can go over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, and see me sit down with Levis, formerly known as No Way Jose, for almost an hour. Really fun guy, really good to talk to. Interesting to get his take on, you know, his time in the company, stuff that he'd pitched to try and get a bigger role. And then there's also an interview going up tonight or tomorrow with Aiden English that I've recorded. So stuff going up there. But when we were talking about the releases, there have been more since. Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero, has been released. They've let go of Kerwin Silfies, who was the director of programming back to 1984. Kane Velasquez, who was signed last year to a multi-million-dollar, multi-year deal, and has had one match in which he lost in probably the most uninspiring way to Brock Lesnar in Saudi Arabia, and then Gerald Briscoe, who, you know, from helping Vince McMahon get control of Georgia Championship Wrestling, all the way through to being a stooge, to being a scout, so he's furloughed at the moment as well. Do any of these names surprise you? Is there anything you want to talk about with any of these names? These are the kind of the bigger names that have kind of come out since the initial big batch of releases that we covered before.
Cain Velasquez. I'm sure most people had forgotten that he was ever there because he didn't, as we'd covered it at the time, a Crown Jewel back on October 31st, I think it was. Match lasted, was it 2 minutes and 10 seconds or something like that? And we were all just astounded by the ease with which Brock Lesnar defeated him, whether Kane was injured or not. And it was like, what was he going to do next? Was he going to come back? I think there was a report at one point that he was going to be in the Royal Rumble, and then he wasn't in the Royal Rumble, and we haven't seen him since. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure when he signed that contract, I'm sure he was smiling. My God, he must have been beaming, you know. And,
well, because he did say in an interview in the UK in January when they brought a bunch of people over on the bus to hype WWE coming to BT Sport, he said he was going to be in the Rumble. And I mean, he was just a flop.
Well, he was. I mean, they brought him in, didn't they, on the first SmackDown, and he appeared on stage, and, you know, Lesnar sold for him and retreated. And it did seem like they were committed to him. And, you know, this attendant to the news that he signed this big deal with WWE. And you're kind of thinking, well, why would they have done this? Why would they have signed him to this long-term deal? I know there was rumblings that AEW was interested in him, but they could have just signed him to a one-year deal and they were supposedly paying him all this money. And why would they do that if they didn't have grand plans for him? I guess it's one of those Vince things, you know, remember when Daniel Bryan used to come out and say, fickle, fickle, fickle? I mean, the person he was talking about was Vince McMahon, of course. He wasn't talking about the audience or the announcers. He was talking about Vince McMahon. And I think this was just another character that Vince lost interest in. He probably thought, oh, yeah, I can do something with this guy. Then he brought him in and the response to him really wasn't, you know, that inspiring. And Vince, combined with everything else that's going on, probably just thought, oh, I can't be bothered with this guy. It's going to be too much effort. You know, let's cut the guy. You know, we'll save a load of money and we'll try somebody else who's cheaper and younger and is probably going to be somebody that we're going to have access to for many years to come and can do more things. So I do understand why they got rid of him. You know, the thing that I didn't understand was the fact that they signed him in the first place and then didn't really do anything with him after this, you know, Brock Lesnar defeat. You know, they bring him in, Lesnar retreats, you know, sells for him, and then Lesnar beats him in 2 minutes. In many ways, there's really no coming back from that. So, strange.
The whole presentation should have been weird because you had him... coming out in that first SmackDown, and then he was just like, he was topless and he didn't look in the best physical aesthetic shape.
No.
And then, you know, I think the thing is, when Ronda Rousey was such a big success, and your instinct would be, well, Cain Velasquez, who had he wrestled in AAA, I think that's where he'd wrestled, and people had been very high on him, saying that he was very good, he had a lot of potential. AEW were interested in him. The irony is that if he'd went to AEW, things would have probably worked out a lot better for him because they would have used him and they would have probably done something to build him up before they gave him his first big loss.
They could still bring him in for Jake Hager if they want.
You can't. The thing is, he's going to have lost a lot of his financial pull, really, because there's a lot of a difference from being the guy who's coming in from MMA, who's this big, massive UFC star, to then being the guy that went to WWE, got jobbed out to Brock Lesnar, and didn't do anything else. So it might hurt him financially in his negotiations, because, and also the pandemic happening, you know, they're probably not going to be... I mean, are AEW going to want to spend money on Cain Velasquez, or are they going to want to pay that money to get, you know, two or three or four names who they think could contribute more, whether it's a, you know, former Zack Ryder or a Rusev or whatever. So
yeah.
I don't know. I just don't think he's got the... I mean, obviously, he is still a big UFC name, but I think the WWE thing does hurt him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he does do, absolutely he does. I mean, you could bring him in for a one or a two match program with Jake Hager and have him put Hager over if he was willing to do so. You know, it's really hard to know. I mean, his whole experience in WWE, I mean, if they were really paying him that much, he will at least have received a lot of money for doing nothing. So it wasn't a total loss for him. I mean, I'm sure it was very financially rewarding and he only had one match. So, I mean, it could have been worse. But I mean, yeah, in terms of long term, I'm not quite sure where he sits. Sometimes in situations like this, a performer is the current circumstance is actually advantageous to him because he can't really do anything. And as time passes and memories fade of the Lesnar match, his value actually might increase and people can kind of be encouraged to forget about it. And then you can sort of start anew with him. I'm not quite sure what else he's going to be able to do apart from the Jake Hager match. But, you know, that's up to AEW anyway. I mean, but he was a guy that, looking at it, I can understand why they did cut him. Gerald Briscoe, as you say, he's been there since 84, I think it will have been, because Jack Briscoe worked for WWF as well back then. So, I mean, it is a surprise, but also, you know, he's getting on a bit now, and maybe this was a mutual decision and that it was time for him to retire. I mean, I know Gerald's had, he's had quite a lot of health problems over the last few years. So, I mean, you know, maybe it was just time for him to retire. I mean, he's only been furloughed, as you say, so he may be brought back.
Do you know what, though? See, I mean, with the Velasquez, like you say, I don't think, I mean, look, Cain Velasquez is not hard up for money, right? The guy's a multimillionaire. He's fine. So yeah. I get cutting him because there's a lot of money. And I mean, we talked about on the other podcast how, you know, we don't think the timing was right for a lot of the releases that they got. But some of them, I mean, even though I think the timing was wrong, I understand they were going to cut people they weren't using. Sure. To me, the Gerald Briscoe one feels quite gross because, you know, the guy's been there. What WWE have kind of put out there with these releases, no matter whether the behind the scenes is mutual or not, is that loyalty does not matter to them. You know, you get Mike Chioda, who's been a referee for, what, 34 years, whatever it was. Briscoe, who, with his brother Jack, they sold, got stock to be bought by Vince McMahon to buy out Georgia Championship Wrestling. He was one of the only people that...
They got the time slot. They got the TV time slot, didn't they? Which was a huge thing back then.
Yeah, and then, you know, he was one of, you know, what, three or four people to know about the screw job. He was there helping Sean backstage to see what, you know, see what would happen if it turned into a shoot. You know, he helped get them Brock Lesnar and all this kind of stuff. I just think that, I just find it very hard to see that when, you know, the dividends that they've just given out for the quarter, which is $9.279 million for the quarter, that they couldn't have just kept Gerald Briscoe on the payroll for six more months.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, they announced the first quarter earnings report last week. It was a gross profit of gross earnings of $291 million. Net profit in the quarter of $26.2 million. That's an after-tax profit in 3 months of $26.2 million. So they're not struggling right now. You know, they did not have to cut anyone couple of weeks ago. I mean, we all know this is not news. I mean, as far as Gerald Briscoe goes, you know, he's been there long enough, Kenny, to know the score. I mean, I'm with you, it comes across as heartless, callous, totally unnecessary. Why have you chosen to do this now? You know, as far as promoting goodwill between you and your audience and the wider public, it's counterproductive. It does not achieve that. It accomplishes the opposite. It just makes you come across as a company that WWE come across as a company that does not care. So, I mean, I'm not trying to justify it, Kenny. I mean, it is a cold, heartless decision. They didn't need to do it. Why not just keep him on until things, you know, revert to normal, and then it wouldn't be the story that it is. We probably wouldn't discuss it. And in fact, Gerald could then have a retirement ceremony, or they could just, you know, do something with it so it was a nice send-off rather than this sort of quiet sort of dismissal. And it's like, let's give this guy who's contributed so much to this company for 36 years or whatever it is, let's give him a send-off, you know, let's do a little ceremony for him. And of course it'd turn into a bit of a comedy, bring Pat in and all the old timers, and it'd be a really fun segment. And maybe they'll still do that, I don't know.
Yes.
But if they did do it, it wouldn't seem as genuine and sincere. I mean, if they were to do that, the sincerity of it would be questioned because of what they've just done.
And the thing is, I'm not saying that I think that Vince McMahon was thrilled to make these decisions or whatever. I'm not even saying that. I just think that, you know, if you take away the ones where they've let people go that they don't really use, if that's the argument, I just think that with Briscoe, there was a loyalty thing that I think he deserved to be kept on more. I just think he, you know, 36 years service, you know, but the other person that we didn't kind of mention, but I did, well, I'd mentioned her name, was Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero, famously had his first run. He was originally suggested by CM Punk to be in the Shield along with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. Ended up being obviously replaced by Roman Reigns in that three-way. He ended up coming back in, I think it was 2016. He's not really done much. Never really got going in NXT. I know his physique and his appearance has always been kind of an issue.
Yeah.
What do you make of the story? Because, I mean, you know, he was in, you know, 2011, 2012. Then he left, went back to the Indies, became really big again as Chris Hero again. And then they signed him again. And they kind of just didn't do anything with him for like 4 years. And now he's 40. So it almost in some ways feels like they just kind of keep him to have him so that he didn't get to do anything anywhere else. I mean, do you think that Cassius Ohno should have done more? Like, where do you kind of sit on him?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, the first run, they weren't happy with his physique. And at one point, they took him off TV for, I think it was about 3 or 4 months. And they said to him, listen, you've got to do something about your body. And he did change it a little bit, but not really that much. And, you know, lots of people were coming up with reasons why his body didn't really change. I don't know whether those reasons were true or they weren't. Then he left the company, kind of reinvented himself on the independent circuit. I mean, he did have, coming out of WWE and being seen as somebody who wasn't used to his full potential in WWE, that gives you quite a lot of sort of cachet on the independent circuit. And people sort of think, you know, I want to be associated with this guy, you know, partly because he's worked for WWE, and partly because people are like, hey, wasn't that guy that worked for WWE and they did nothing with him? Well, you know, he's going to work for this company now and he's going to have this really good match and I want to see him here. I want to see what he can do. I want to see what WWE missed out on. And I think also it can be a huge motivating factor as well for the talent after they've been in WWE and basically flopped. They then leave and then they're massively motivated to prove their worth on the independent circuit because they sort of have to in order to get bookings and to drive their price up, but also to sort of show WWE that they were wrong not to invest more time and energy and effort into them. So I think sometimes it can work really well for the talent. Obviously, Drew McIntyre being the classic example from 2014. You know, a guy in 3MB who was basically comedy character, comedy performer. They release him, goes to ICW, all these other companies, reinvents himself and comes back and he's now their champ. So, I mean, there's a lot of examples of that. And I think Cassius Ohno was one of those. And he was getting rave reviews after he left WWE for his work in various companies. I think he really had something to prove to himself and to the public and to the industry as a whole that WWE blew it with him and that he really did have something to offer the business. And I remember doing an interview with Andy Quilden from Revolution Pro in 2016, and he'd used Chris Hero on some of his shows. And he was just, you know, talking about what a tremendous performer he was and how he really had a lot of really good ideas backstage as well. He was somebody who had a lot to offer backstage, not just in the ring. And shortly after that, he was then re-signed, as you said, by WWE and went into NXT. And it was as if, oh, yeah, they're going to get it right this time. And it's a different landscape, which it was, because you go back to like 2012, 2013, they weren't hiring the Kevin Owenses. You know, they weren't hiring people like that. And then they brought Kevin Owens in and Sami Zayn in, and they were a big success in NXT and then got over on the main roster as well. And at that point, it did seem like the landscape had changed and that Cassius Ohno, as he then became when he rejoined WWE, his physique wouldn't be such a hindrance. But it still, I think it still sort of was. And he did some good stuff, I thought, in NXT. But he was very much, what did they present him as? The gatekeeper. That was his sort of last gimmick, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he had that match on one of the takeovers with Matt Riddle, didn't he? Where it was like, you know, you're coming in here and, you know, you're not going to get past me. And then Matt Riddle did, of course, defeat him at the event. Can't remember the takeover, sorry. And it was like a really good match. And Cassius Ohno, I think, provided a... He was a very effective in that role as somebody that was a really good in-ring performer who could give a newcomer a match, had a bit of credibility because he'd been in the business for a long time. And if that performer then beat him, he would then go on to bigger and better things. So I think Cassius Ohno did have a lot to offer NXT still, more as in the form of a trainer or a coach or somebody that was there to put people over. So in a sense, it's a surprise that he's gone because I really do think he had a lot to contribute for many, many years to come. But at the same time, I don't think he was ever going to become anything more than that. And if you're looking down a list of people who are expendable, you know, you come to the list and you get to a guy who's never going to progress beyond his current status, then they're the guys that are, you know, going to be more susceptible to the chop, aren't they? So I do get it. I don't agree with it, but I do understand why it happened.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I always kind of found, and this maybe sounds really bad, I always thought that in his second run, the gear always looked a bit naff.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of basketball top. But it's difficult because when you're, you know, if you look at a guy like Killian Dane, who's in WWE, like when he used to be in the Indies in Scotland, he would, you know, he was a lot smaller. And then he was kind of at this point where it was like, I either need to become a big beefy bastard or I need to lose weight. You know, that's because when you're in the middle, it's hard to kind of be that size. So he went really big and then Cash Sonos kind of stayed in between. I mean, I know he's 40 now, but I mean, if things pick up and, you know, if we get wrestling shows that maybe have like 200 people at a show by the end of the year, then, you know, maybe he's still got a couple of years to go. I'm sure he does. You know, there's a lot of guys in wrestling who were great in their early 40s, even like Shawn Michaels and stuff. So
I think he's
definitely going to have a little bit of a point to prove. And, you know, I think he'll do fine.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think, you know, having been caught, I mean, he was there for quite a while this time. And I think he understood what his role was. And I'm sure he understood what his role was. I mean, he's a really smart guy. He's Chris Hero. He knows the business really well. He understands the way things work. So it wouldn't surprise me if he saw, you know, I imagine he probably did see this coming, especially when there was that massive great raft of releases a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I imagine probably was thinking, you know, I can't believe that I wasn't on that list. And then a couple of weeks later, he's added to the list. But I think he's a guy that has a lot to offer the business, not just in the ring, but backstage as well. And at 40, I mean, that's in this day and age, that's young. I mean, you know, he could have 5-6 good years left or more than that. He could be.
Look at Jericho. Jericho's 49. So the thing is, I think when you're in your 40s, if you can strike the balance of being a big character,
yeah,
then you don't need to do as much in the ring. And then you can get away with, you know, having a longer shelf life.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I'm sure this is not the last we've heard of him. And I'm sure when things resume and shows begin running again with people in attendance, we're going to see him in a promotion with a profile. And he's going to contribute a lot to that promotion.
Was there anything from the WWE Q1 financials, the call, and that Vince said, any numbers that stuck out to you?
Well, I mean, this the advertised it as a strong quarter, and you know, they made a lot of money, they grossed a lot of money. I mean, this was really before things changed. As we've seen, you know, they put a lot of things, they've made a lot of changes since then. I mean, if you look at the stock price, that has gone up over the last month. Month ago, it was like $33. And as of today, it's $44. So it has gone up $11, the stock price. So that's up a bit. You know, there's lots of things we could delve into, Kenny, but I don't know whether it's really that interesting.
Well, we did, I mean, what was interesting is that one of the interesting parts of it is that WWE now, a lot of their money that they get is not from live events, right? And the and you know, we saw this even before lockdown came in, that there's a lot of talk that they're not going to run as many house shows anymore. You know, they're not going to, I can't ever see them going back to a, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday loop, or a, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday loop or whatever. Like, I just don't think that it's there. And I was trying to think about this when we were talking, you know, because next week we'll be covering the UK pay-per-view Insurrection 2000 for Patreon. And I was watching it yesterday because I'm trying to get a hit. Well, nothing else to do, Vince. I'm just watching everything. And it struck me, the idea that, like, in 2000 or whatever, like, you just had to go to a live WWF event WWF event. You had to go because you wanted to see Rock, you wanted to see Jericho, you wanted to see the McMahons, you wanted to see Angle, you wanted to see all these big stars and big characters. And then, you know, inevitably when the show was over, you knew there was some fun to be had after the show was off the air. Whether it was Errol Hebner doing a, you know, people's elbow on somebody, or whether it was Austin drinking a beer and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like now, none of that's really there anymore. So there's not really, I mean, I personally, and I love watching shows, I love going to TV tapings and stuff, but I wouldn't pay 50 quid to go to a house show. I just wouldn't. There's just nowhere near the value that I would need for that. I don't know whether it's because there's so much content now, but I just think that the value of the live event right now with what they put out there is people just aren't finding that an attractive commodity.
Well, you're right, yeah. I mean, and the numbers bear that out. I mean, if you look at it, ticket sales, I know they'd stopped admitting fans by late March, but for the majority of this three-month period, you were allowed to attend a WWE event. And if you look at North American ticket sales, in the first 3 months of 2019, WWE grossed $24.1 million. In the first 3 months of 2020, WWE from ticket sales in North America grossed $15.2 million. So that's a massive decrease, isn't it, in revenue from ticket sales at live events. I mean, that's huge. I mean, the only good thing you can say about that is that ticket sale revenue comprises such a small part of the overall financial income that WWE, you know, that fuels and powers WWE, that they're not really missing the money because it's been, you know, more than offset by the huge rights fees that they're getting now. I mean, first 3 months of 2019, WWE took in $68.1 million in rights fees. That's TV rights fees, or core content rights fees, as they describe it in their earnings report. So, yeah, $68.1 million in the first 3 months of 2019. In the first 3 months of 2020, WWE grossed $133.2 million in core content rights fees. So the amount of money that they're making from the TV product, you know, with no fans in attendance, is enormous. And it just shows how much the business has changed, that if it just eliminated house shows, eliminated and never ran shows in front of fans again, and obviously it will and it needs to for the atmosphere, but if it were to never do that again, WWE would still be a supremely viable, very profitable business, because ticket sales are such a small part of it now.
And then this just really tickled me, so I wanted to read out this little news nugget to you to just get your take, Finn. You know, I've not read it to you off air, so just your direct, immediate thoughts, okay? So Matt Stryker, you remember Matt Stryker, WWE ring announcer, former ECW wrestler, he will be a contestant on a new reality show on Fox called Labor of Love. and the show is going to be based around 41-year-old Christy Katzman, a successful career woman who wants to have a child and time is running out. There will be 15 men, Matt Strike will be one of them, competing to try and father a child with her. The show debuts May 21st, will air for 8 weeks, where Katzman will either decide for a man to have a child with or even to settle down with.
What channel is this on?
Fox. Fox Network. I don't know what exact channel, but Fox Network are... That's what it... I don't know if it's on, like, the main Fox channel, but... I mean, look, you got to get yourself out there somehow, right?
I mean, I suppose we're now... I mean, I haven't watched the show on Netflix, but I'm aware of it, and I've seen the trailer, and lots of people have talked about, the Tiger King show, and that's just been this massive hit, hasn't it, on Netflix, and he's become this, like, household name, hasn't he, the film? And you think, well, it's really no crazier than that.
So apparently it is going to air on the main Fox channel.
I mean, reality TV. I mean, do you remember, don't you, when Big Brother started in this country in, where was it, in the 90s? Was it 2000?
Yeah. The first one was the guy, a plumber, Craig Phillips or something? That won the first
Was it the Nasty Nick guy?
Nick was in the first series, yeah. And he was trying to, that was the first season.
He was like lying to the other members of the house about what he was playing his games to try and win, wasn't he? And he was caught out and then vilified by the rest of his housemates. But I mean, obviously reality TV had been around long before that, but that was really the starting point for many people thinking, that was seen as like the start of where we are now, like the modern era of reality TV probably does emanate from Big Brother and its success and lots of others that stemmed from that. So here we are 20 years on and Matt Stryker's appearing in, Matt probably feels like, it's a great way to up my profile. I mean, WWE is not an option now. I mean, he was involved with Lucha Underground, wasn't he, for quite a while, wasn't he, Matt Stryker? He was an announcer on that. So, I mean, I guess the work's dried up, Kenny, and he's having to resort to this. I don't know. I mean, this was a guy who was the school teacher, wasn't he? Was he phoning in sick when he actually wasn't sick? Went to wrestling shows? Is that the story?
I remember that he ended up being one of the first people where, like, people outed private pictures that he'd been sending to people.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that, which was... God bless him.
Yeah, but, I mean, I know he was a school teacher. I can't remember how that all ended, but I think it was about 2005 that ended. And I apologise if I've got the story wrong there, and I apologise to Matt as well if I got the story wrong there. But, yeah, what a journey he's been on, Kenny, eh?
What a journey. Indeed.
And where might the journey go after this? I mean, the mind boggles, doesn't it?
It does. So let's talk a little bit about Raw and SmackDown, or SmackDown and Raw. I always want to say Raw and SmackDown. SmackDown and Raw from this past week. There's not really... I know that our shows in the last couple of weeks have been fairly heavily WWE-based, but... there's not really been much else going on. Obviously, Japan's still closed up. AEW are, we'll probably talk about AEW more when we get closer to Double or Nothing coming up on May 23rd.
Yeah.
But,
Impact Wrestling's still going, Kenny. I mean, it was only last week's episode. That was the first one. The April 21st episode was the first one that they held in an empty arena. Prior to that, they'd had fans in attendance. So Impact's still going.
You'll never give it up, will you?
I've got to say, Josh and Madison are on commentary, and I think they make a pretty good team.
Well, we should give Impact and ROH actually some props because they are both fully paying talent, and nobody's been released, and they're doing all they can. So more power to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a few weeks behind, in all honesty, on my Impact, but Kylie Rae, she's just made her debut. And the, actually, it was the March 31st episode. Well, it wasn't a debut because she was involved in the Bound for Glory. She was in, participated in Bound for Glory back in October. But she made an appearance. I think this was her first appearance as a full-time player for Impact. It was on the March 31st episode. And she defeated Cassandra Golden. And I thought Kylie Rae looked really good. And then afterwards, she giddily told Jimmy Jacobs that she'd signed a long-term deal with Impact. But they made a big deal of her signing. And I thought Kylie looked tremendous in her first match. Or her first match as a full-timer with the company.
And is Tessa Blanchard still the world champion?
Well, up until, as far as I know, she is. As I say, I'm a few weeks behind. I don't look at spoilers, Kenny, because I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to, you know, ruin the enjoyment of watching Impact Wrestling.
Luckily for you, who's posting them?
Well, yeah, there's that as well. But yeah, up to where I am, yes, she is still champ. But
The reason I was asking is because I was thinking, you know, Tessa Blanchard and Kylie Rae could be a pretty good program if Tessa goes back to facing women.
Yes, I imagine. She's wrestling men and women. So, but she's still champ. I think she's doing a good job. I mean, it's greatly. I mean, each time you watch it, you can just sort of see the cost cutting. You know, each time you watch it, you think, my God, they've got rid of that person as well. And oh, what's happened to her? What's happened to him? And you know, but I think they are putting on an entertaining product still. It's stripped right down in terms of there's no flab at all. There's no excess spending. Anyway, we'll talk about Impact maybe next week or the week after. I'll hopefully by that point be up to date on my viewing, and I would rather be up to date on the TV before I start talking about it in any further depth, because I'll probably say the wrong thing, Kenny.
Okay, let's talk about SmackDown. We got some more Money in the Bank stuff. We saw Baron Corbin get into the Money in the Bank ladder match by beating Drew Gulak. We saw Lacey Evans beating Sasha Banks to get into the women's Money in the Bank match. I kind of wanted to ask you what you thought about the... you know, we thought last week that Sasha was going to be in the Money in the Bank match, but that's not the case. What do you make of it? Are they taking us in a different direction?
Well, I don't know whether they are long term, but certainly short term they are, because she's not going to be in the match. But I mean, it definitely was a furtherance of the Sasha and Bayley storyline, wasn't it? With Sasha versus Lacey Evans in the Money in the Bank qualifier. Sasha had Lacey pinned. But Bayley had the referee distracted, and by the time the referee turned around and went over to make the count, Evans had sufficiently recovered that she could kick out. And then Sasha told Bayley to stay out of it. So she's yelling at Bayley, you know, stay out of my match. And then when Sasha turned around after admonishing Bayley, Lacey Evans hit the woman's right, scored the three count. Evans qualified and Sasha was out. So I wasn't expecting this, I have to say. It's still, to me, the story is continuing with the Sasha Bayley breakup. That's obviously where they're heading, but it's perhaps going to take a little bit longer than we thought it was going to. And, you know, maybe that's not a bad thing.
Well, I mean, that does lead us to the fact that Tamina attacks Bayley, and then Tamina has put this video out. Which, I mean, wow. Big Tam finally coming in with some
personality. Some pizzazz.
Self-deprecating, like, she was funny. And she did this video online where she basically talks about, like, her anger and all this kind of stuff. And I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, I saw it, yeah. It was amusing. And she's sending herself up and showing some other sides to her personality. I mean, let's face it, one side to her personality would be a start, wouldn't it? You know, that would be an improvement on her current on-screen persona, which is, you know, a bit of a drip, really. It's not very exciting. So it's always a shame when you see the performer be themselves or come up with something by themselves, and it's so much better than what the team of highly paid writers have come up with for that performer. And you just, you know, you just sort of face palm, don't you? You know, you just put your head in your hands and think, well, how hard is it? You know, she's just proven that she can do so much more than you're allowing her to do. And if she were allowed to do this, surely she would get over more become a bigger character, more interesting, sell more, you know, not that selling tickets really matters now because they can't sell tickets, but you know what I mean. You just become a more valuable part of the show and a more, you know, interesting and entertaining part of the show as well. But yeah, Tamina came out and kicked Bayley. So the Bayley versus Tamina match got a little bit promotion from SmackDown.
I've got to say, if you had told me 2 months ago, now I'm not saying that I'm like watching this thinking it's Taker Michaels at WrestleMania or anything, but like I actually am fairly interested in Tamina versus Bayley because Tamina's showing me a little bit of personality. Bayley's got the Sasha thing going on, so they've done a little bit of build, which has made me not want to run away in abject terror at the idea of this match taking place. That's a positive.
Oh, I agree, and this is what happens when the booking supports the performers. Which is what it's supposed to do at all times.
But unfortunately, Finn, it wasn't everybody's night on SmackDown. Because, you know, last week you were on here saying maybe it's going to be Dana Brooke's night. She's going to not only go to Money in the Bank and get that briefcase, but she's also going to become, you know, hopefully become one half of the Women's Tag Team Champions.
I didn't say that.
You said maybe she was going for the double because she was going for the tag titles and she was going for Money in the Bank.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You did say that.
They were pursuing the tag team championships, yeah. But, I mean, I wasn't like, yay, go Carmella, go Dana, woo, you know, and just getting all giddy about them becoming champs.
You were DMing me with t-shirt ideas for them.
I've been outed now, haven't I? Exposed.
Carmella and Dana Brooke are fucking dreadful together. Like, just... They had no chemistry whatsoever as a team.
No.
Like, nothing. And I feel like that's... I mean, the problem is that Carmella and Dana Brooke are okay. They're okay, but, like, neither of them is really polished enough to carry the other. So I feel like that kind of is what led this to just kind of fall apart.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a match, and Carmella just feels lost to me right now. She's somebody who's not too bad when she... You know... If she feels that she's got a purpose that's taking her somewhere, she becomes a better performer than she is at the moment, where you can see that she's just not into it at all because she doesn't believe in it. I mean, she can do certain things quite well, but you put her in the wrong environment and it's usually not pretty at all. And Carmella, and as you say, Carmella and Dana were just... Yeah, there's just no spark at all between them. There was no real reason for them to team up apart from to pursue the tag team title. And the only reason they got this title match is because there's few other candidates available, apparently. But hopefully this will be the last time that these two team, because not only were they uninteresting and just not very good as a team, I felt like they really brought down Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. I mean, this was I'm not saying it was amateur hour, but this was like flashback to 2010, you know, Diva Division type standards. Well, maybe not that bad. But, I mean, my God, it wasn't very good, this match at all. And we expect, I think, more these days. And I thought Alexa really had a bad night. And I was watching this thinking, I'm sure Alexa Bliss used to be better than this. And, you know, maybe I'm just not remembering it correctly. But I thought Alexa looked like she's really scrappy here, just... Did not look like a competent performer at all. And maybe that's because she was in there with Carmella and Dana Brooke. Maybe it's that simple.
You know, maybe it's similar to Carmella, that when Alexa's got something to sink her teeth into, it works. And when she doesn't, then... I mean, because if you're a women's tag team champion, right, and you've just won the belts, did they win at WrestleMania, didn't they?
Yes, they won it for the second time, yeah.
And the thing is, like, you're not exactly going to get excited when they say, oh, we've got you in a program, and you're going to face off against Carmella and Dana Brooke. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, you just, there'd be no excitement there.
No.
I also enjoyed the video package on Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt on SmackDown, kind of detailing the history of them and the Wyatt family. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, I thought they did a good job with that one.
But it was all leading to the main event, which was Triple H's 25th anniversary. So Triple H comes out, he has water and it's taken off of him by one of the stagehands.
He sells it.
Now, I've got to admit, I thought this segment was great. It really made me laugh. I thought it was funny. self-deprecating and kind of everything it needed to be. It was a train wreck, but I thought it was a fun train wreck. Did it work for you or did it not?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I thought, you know, there was this and the Firefly Funhouse match at WrestleMania. These were the two best things WWE has done in like 2 or 3 months. And I just thought this was so funny, you know. Triple H is out there and, you know, he was soon joined by the Heartburn Kid, the sexy boy Shawn Michaels. Shawn says, I got two words for you, social distancing. So I thought that set it out quite well. And Michaels said that he sent out hundreds of invitations for his Triple H's 25th anniversary bash. But there was only like them two there and the commentators who were contractually obligated to appear. So, you know, they were not included in the hundreds of people who were no-shows. And, you know, Shawn said to Triple H, you're still a draw. You've still got it. You're still packing them in. it was really funny. I mean, I just, you know, what were your favourite bits of this, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the whole social distancing bit was great. When they got, Stephanie on FaceTime and Shawn's calling her Stephanie No Fun and Flair's there and he says, you know, don't let Shawn super kick you at the end of the segment. Road Dogg, who looked 40 years older than the last time we saw him.
Be a warning to everyone, you know, about the dangers of growing a beard.
Well, you know what's funny?
Then if it goes grey, don't let it go grey.
Well, yesterday, I trim I don't have a beard, but I always trim my stubble, right? And I always do like the attachment that's like the fourth, you know, the fourth least severe shave-in version. And yesterday I just couldn't be bothered. I was like, I'm just going to do the full, you know, trim to get it right down to like very, very, just like short stubble. And as I was kind of doing it, I saw a couple of grey hairs. And I was like, oh my God. This
it's all
is
over.
Grim.
It's all over, Kenny. That's it now.
Look, I don't think I'm above a bit of Just For Men. I'll sleep in it. That's what it takes. Road Dogg's descend into the abyss came just at the right time for me.
So then they're talking about you know, DX and how, you know, every time they were, you know, one take wonders, you know, never screwed anything up. And by this point, you already know where it's going. Then he showed a series of outtakes of them screwing everything up. And that was really funny. And then they were saying, like, I've done another video. Shawn said, Triple H, I've done another video for you. Your WrestleMania highlight reel. And it was him losing WrestleMania one match after another. And I think Triple H is a pretty good actor in these situations. So you never really know if he's finding it funny or whether he's just putting it. It seemed to me that he was finding this genuinely amusing.
Well, it feels like he's got to a point now where he no longer is trying to. He's happy with his legacy now. Yeah. But he's like, okay, I'm seen as one of the greats. Happy days, you know. And then Vince comes out, and Vince just, my God, he's like talking about, you know, this is one of the most boring segments in company history. He compares it to the gobbledygooker. He mocks him for Katie Vick.
Oh, I mean, that was brilliant, wasn't it? You know, it was Shawn who brought up Katie Vick firstly, and there's Triple H with his head in his hands. And then Vince brought it up again, and he said, you know, I have, regarding Katie Vick to Triple H, this is what he said. I have no idea why you stooped to those depths. That was bad. At least it was not only boring, it was in poor taste. And it was just one. You think, you know, at some moment here, the tone's going to change. And the tone never did.
And then he compares it to Bailey's This Is Your Life. And he goes, that wasn't Bailey's fault, which essentially, as if like Triple H booked it. And then Vince says, you know, I love you. And he says, I love you too. And Shawn says, I love you both. And then Vince said, both of your performances tonight were so rotten. Just wrap it up. And then the lights go out and we hear crickets as the show goes off the air. Shawn Michaels is going, are we being kicked out? It was so funny.
And then Triple H goes, because earlier, Vince had brought the crickets chirping during the Bailey This Is Your Life segment, and then actually did make the save, as you said, for her, and said, well, you know, not that it was her fault, Well, yeah, that's probably true, but Bayley was still pretty awful in that segment, as I recall.
And then she actually tweeted out going, "Thank you, Vince, it wasn't my fault."
So Vince used the phrase "crickets chirping," so that then led to the lights going out and then the sound of crickets chirping being heard, and Triple H said, "Do you hear crickets?" And Sean said, "Story of your career, buddy."
It was brilliant. It was so funny. Because the thing is, with Triple H, like, he almost needed, his celebration needed to be something like this. Because yeah. he's set for life. He's in the company. He can make videos about himself forevermore. He doesn't need a big wank fest to himself.
No, definitely not. No, it's like, I mean, he can take it. He's comfortable with his position, obviously, in a company, even though he's recently demoted, you know, and where he is and his history there, that he can take it, you know, he's fair game for this. And I think a lot of people probably watched it and really enjoyed it. All those people who, you know, watched him between the years, you know, 2000 and like 2010 or whenever it was when he sort of went part-time, and just thought, yeah, it's about time that somebody pointed this lot out. And, you know, this is justice for all your transgressions back in the day when you had the power and you were using it for your own self-aggrandizement. So, there was a lot of reasons why it was enjoyable. For me, I don't really have anything bad to say again about Triple H about that period anymore, because I've written it and we've said it many times.
We had a really good discussion 2 weeks ago whenever it was on Triple H. So
absolutely, and I think, you know, he's a different person now. He's not that guy anymore, and he is all about promoting the company and
for the future. NXT really has been his savior in terms of his legacy. I do want to just point out that WrestleVotes, who, as we always say, are fairly solid source on Twitter for posts and stuff, they had shared a tweet that they shared a text message with somebody, I guess, who works in WWE, and the WrestleVotes person had said, "Bro, what was that Vince shit last night?" And this is on Saturday, and the person replied, "That's what he's been like the last 2 weeks or so. I'm seeing, think this pandemic, Mania cancelled, XFL getting killed has finally got to him, and he's at the fuck it part of it all. Screw it, Vince could be wild." So this is where we are.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, it was quite something, wasn't it, to see Vince out there just, you know, ripping the piss out of his own son-in-law, in a segment that was supposed to celebrate, you know, the legacy and the achievements of, you know, one of the, you know, biggest stars in at least in recent company history. And it was, I didn't see it coming at all. I was not expecting that at all. And it was, I just thought it was tremendous because it was so unexpected and was just entertaining. And it didn't matter that Triple H was trash for that period, because it's, in many ways, it got him more over than if they'd done this. Well, kind of on Raw, we'll talk about this in a moment. On Raw, they did also continue the sort of tribute to him. Well, actually didn't continue it, started the tribute to him. trying to, I guess, in a sense, undo the damage that they did on SmackDown. But there wasn't really any damage done, because he's a guy who's bulletproof, and that he's somebody who's willing to send himself up, and what's more, seems to enjoy sending himself up. And there's not that many wrestlers like that in the business who would stand there and allow that. Because, I mean, let's face it, Triple H has got the power. He could have shut that one down, couldn't he? He could have said, "I'm not going along with that." Oh, no way. He could have done that. And he went along with it. And he seemed to have a great time just being the butt of the joke. And, you know, I just thought it was, to me, I've got more respect for him now than I had before I saw that.
Yeah, same. Well, you know, the other thing that I was thinking about after I'd watched it was that this gives me slight hope that one day he might be open to doing a Firefly Funhouse match. Because if he's willing to, and then there's kind of a built-in story of, like, you know, Triple H was the guy who let Bray Wyatt grow, and then he sent him to the wolves of the main roster to all that. And there's a, you know, you can work a story in there to make it work. And if Triple H is willing to do this, then maybe he is willing to go in and do, I mean, can you imagine Triple H in like a terrible wig doing his blue blood phase again and stuff? be so funny.
It would be fantastic.
Yeah,
it would be, yeah. I mean, it was, yeah, I think he'd be well up for something like that. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that would be something that would be, I think he would enjoy doing it, and it would actually be something that would enhance his reputation as somebody, because in a way he's still got some mate, even though as we saw, as it was illustrated in the SmackDown segment, he's lost so many matches at WrestleMania, and you kind of forget how many matches that he's lost at WrestleMania. It still feels like maybe he's got a, he could do with maybe putting a few people over still to sort of right the wrongs of the old days. And if he were to appear in a Firefly Funhouse match and obviously lose to the Fiend stroke Bray Wyatt at the end, I think people would say, you know, good on you for doing something else to help, you know, a current performer and to make him, you know, a bigger star for the future and for the betterment of the of WWE.
Yeah, for sure. So I thought SmackDown was a fun enough show. I've got to say, Raw, I really felt this was a slog this week to get through. There was some good stuff on it, but like, you know, we got MVP doing a VIP lounge, which led us to a six-man tag with Andrade, Angel Garza, and Austin Theory against Rey Mysterio, Aleister Black, and Apollo Crews. It felt like it went on for about 5 years. Yeah. Rey Mysterio finally got the pin on Andrade. No, Apollo Crews, sorry. Yeah. Which set us up for later on Apollo getting a US title shot against Andrade where he hurt his knee.
I mean, can you believe, Kenny, that we were subjected to this match that just went on, and then they wrestled again later on the programme?
Well, also, they wrestled later on the programme with the least over babyface.
Oh, I mean, that match between Cruz and Andrade later, I was just... I mean, I've normally got a really long attention span and I don't easily get distracted. And I was really struggling with this one, with the Andrade versus Cruz match. I mean, it just went on and on. Bearing in mind, we'd already seen him in a segment. You know, we'd already seen... Actually, they did actually have a confrontation backstage, didn't they, in which Cruz slapped Andrade across the face. So, yes. I mean, that was a real slap there. Yeah, that was Andrade and Apollo Crews. They had a confrontation backstage. Cruz slapped Andrade, and then that led to the match, didn't it? Which was for Andrade's US title. And this match not only wasn't good, because partly because we'd already seen them, and it was hard to really maintain enthusiasm for seeing these two compete again. But the thing that really did it in for me was the finish. It was so unconvincing. I cannot believe for a moment that Cruz suffered a genuine injury to his left knee and was in sufficient pain that the referee had to stop the match. At no point was that believable to me. And then later on, we saw Cedric backstage on crutches, and it was just a dire acting performance. You know, it was like a spoof or a caricature of a pro wrestler feigning pain. I just thought, my God, this guy should be fired on the spot for that performance. I thought it was atrocious, really atrocious. And yeah, I mean, so Cedric's supposedly injured. Well, if you're going to do an injury angle, you know, put your back into it and make us believe, because I didn't believe any of that. Maybe no. I'm just being silly there. He doesn't really need to be fired over it. But I mean, you know. I'm just, you know, just ignore that. It's just really stupid. But I mean, you know, I absolutely genuinely do believe that he could have done a better job on the selling. Just, you know, for what was a...
Nobody believes it. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Apollo Crews, you know, he's a very athletic guy. I know he wrestled in the UK as UHA Nation before he went to WWE. And I've heard lots of people say he was brilliant. I've just never seen it. You know, he's very athletic, but like... Character-wise, he's just dull as dog shit. He just has nothing going, and
he doesn't have the ability to project emotion to me. And that is the thing. You've got to be able to do that. That's how you get over and connect with the audience.
Yeah, because
if
you look at like a Rey Mysterio, you know, Rey Mysterio, although he doesn't show a huge amount of emotion, he shows more emotion with a mask than. You know, Apollo Crews does without. You know, you saw the stuff with Lesnar and Dominic was amazing. I mean, Aleister Black, the jury's kind of still out, but he's still more over than Apollo Crews. So, yeah. While I like the heel faction, and I really like Zelina Vega actually kind of leading her guys against these babyfaces, it just, it went on for so long, and by the time I got to the end of the singles match, so I think the six-man was 25 minutes, and then the singles match was 16 minutes before we got the referee stoppage, and I was just like, I've spent so much time on this, it just... I was bored out of my tits.
Hey, I tell you, Kenny, if Vince Russo, if this were 1999 and Vince Russo were booking this, how long do you think he would have given Cruz in the six-man match and then in the latest singles match?
I think the six-man match we would have had about 5 minutes. And then I think the US title match, I'd give it about a minute and 45. What do you think?
Yeah, I reckon about that, yeah. And Vince Russo would be thinking, God, that's still too long.
He'd probably be right. although... The big news, Finn, the Maharaja is back.
Oh, yes.
Jinder Mahal is back on our screens, shaven head, looking like a boss. Jinder is back.
Squashed Akira Tozawa.
Not a ramen moonsault in sight, unfortunately.
Yeah, who back in the Power Slam days was several times in the PS50, you know, tremendous performer in his Dragon Gate days. Now he's a jobber for Jinder Mahal. And it appeared to me that they're trying to make Jinder into a serious player again. There was no humour. There was no silliness. You know, this was Jinder's back and he means business.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if there's anything different going on than what he had before. But, you know, good for him. He's been out injured. He's got his way back. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, he was in great shape. I mean, you know, in the ring, he looked pretty good. I was as good as Jinder's ever going to look. You know, it's just like, I'm not excited about anything that he's going to do. I've got to be honest, because I've already seen it all, and it's not going to be as good the next this time around.
But then you say that, Finn. You thought you'd seen it all from Tamina, and then she did that video.
Well, that's true, yeah. That's true. But, I mean, Jinder has done all sorts of silly stuff as well, hasn't he? He's done all sorts of zany stuff and character-based stuff with, you know, he's been serious, you know, he's played the comedy character, he's done all sorts of stuff. I mean, that's not true, actually. I would be interested in a Jinder Mahal, Great Khali tag team. Now that, I'm not sure. I'd pay money to see that. I'd pay money to see those two on a house show.
If that's not a reason for this pandemic to get away, I don't know what is. We can finally get that. They did the angle with Nia Jax interrupting Asuka's rant about Kairi Sane. We were supposed to get a triple threat match with Nia, Shayna, and Asuka, but Nia basically just destroys them both, runs a ladder into them. So the match never really got started. What did you make of that? Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to not give us the match and give us a Nia standing tall. Did you enjoy the way they presented that?
I mean, I suppose they probably thought, well, you know, let's not give too much of this away because it's money in the bank a week on Sunday. So, yeah, Asuka versus Shayna Baszler versus Nia Jax. Baszler attacked Asuka. They threw each other around at ringside. They took some, you know, pretty stiff bumps out there. They were throwing each other into the barrier and into ladders. Mm-hmm. You know, they really went for it. So, I mean, I think it made sense. Because why would you do a proper match between these three when they're going to be involved in the match at Money in the Bank a week on Sunday? So I do get it. Yeah, I had no objection to what they did. I mean, it was short and sweet. I mean, actually, I would have preferred this to last a little bit longer and for Apollo Crews to be sucked up less minutes of the program. So, in that regard, I would have liked to see more from them. But I understand why they... minimize the length of the time. They kept it to a minimum because, you know, they're saving it for the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, they were really going for it out there. And then backstage afterwards, Charlie Caruso interviewed Nia Jax. And Nia said, "What can anyone do about my actions, Charlie?" And then she screeched, "Nothing." And Charlie seemed quite shocked. So, I mean, it almost seemed like a shot at the people who complained about her performance in the Kairi Sane match last week. So that seemed to be a response in that promo to the people who had criticised her for being reckless in the match with Sane last week. What, did you read that into it as well, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I did. I did read that into it. So I assume that's the case because, yeah, that's what I took from it anyway.
What can anyone do about my actions? Nothing!
I do want to give... My favourite thing on Raw actually was the main event segment with Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins. I thought Drew was great. In this segment, you know, he's saying to Seth... Because he comes out, he just signs the contract straight away. He says, you know, we can just get this done in 30 seconds. And then, of course, Rollins starts his long, boring crap that he does. And Drew just says, you know, you're completely full of shit. As he was.
Yeah, I mean, we should mention that Jerry Lawler introduced the contract signing segment because Samoa Joe, mercifully, was on the commentary team. So it seemed like, you know, maybe Vince was listening there to complaints about Lawler. I don't know. But, I mean, Samoa Joe was obviously a massive improvement on Lawler at the commentary disc. I mean, he did a really good job working with Byron and Tom Phillips. You know, Samoa Joe is in touch with what's going on. You know, he's aware of what's happening. He's interested. You know, he knows what year it is. You know, we've complimented Joe before on his commentary performance. And I thought he did a really good job here. He seems to really enjoy it. You know, he seems to really relish the prospect of doing commentary. Whereas Lawler has just been phoning it in for so long that, I mean, it wasn't Backlash 99, which we're going to be reviewing on Patreon. It wasn't, you know, he was still interested in the years after that. But certainly by the late 2000s, Lawler was phoning it in. And, you know, it's just embarrassing hearing him now, even when he's, you know, not making, you know, comments that could be construed as racist. You know, Lawler just... I mean, if you're going to use him, I mean, I know they signed him to a new contract. Gosh, when was it? I think it was about a year ago, wasn't it? They signed him to a new contract. Mm-hmm, I think it was around the time that AEW was signing people up and Lawler signed a contract extension there. So they've got him for probably at least another 2 years. If you're going to use Lawler and you're going to try and make your money out of him, use him as a part-time host for segments like this, but just keep him away from the commentary desk. But introduced Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre. And Drew said, you know how these things go, Jerry. You know, I can guarantee you that this is going to go the same direction that all contract signing segments do, i.e. ending in violence. So why not vacate the ring now? And happily, Lawler did. So we didn't have to hear him anymore. Rollins was there kind of monotone. That seems to be his new gimmick. I mean, he was kind of monotone anyway as a speaker. Rollins was saying that we all needed a leader and that Rollins was saying that he could be the light in our darkness. You know, I mean, I kind of thought, was that a shot Donald Trump? You know, because, I mean, let's face it, America right now needs some light in the darkness, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So he told Drew that in time it would all make sense, and that, you know, Rollins is the guy that the title and the company and the people need, you know, and that Drew, you know, will be champion one day and can be an effective champion one day, but right now WWE needs Seth Rollins as heavyweight champ. So and all that led to a big fight, of course.
Murphy got involved.
Yeah, that's right. Drew was beating down Seth Rollins. Murphy ran in and kind of made the save. And then he took a shot from Drew as Rollins retreated. And that was the show.
I thought I liked that Drew had brought up, you know, you should shut your mouth, whether it's online, whether it's whatever. Like, Drew came across here how a babyface champion should come across. You know, he was pointing out Seth's flaws, saying, you know, the fans turned on you, but it's never their fault. It's never your fault. It's never Seth's fault. And then when he ended up, you know, going for Rollins and giving him the Glasgow kiss, if anything can come out of Drew McIntyre's reign, it's that now announcers know how to say Glasgow and not Glasgow, as they used to call it. And then Murphy comes out and, you know, they end up, McIntyre and Rollins end up kind of staring off as McIntyre's music plays to close the show. I thought Drew was really good here. Rollins is quite monotone. He was dressed like a hitman when he came out for this, in his black suit with a white shirt and black tie with one glove. I just love the idea of Seth Rollins, like, you know what made me look really hard? One glove. One glove. That's all it takes. There you go.
I mean, I'm not really... I mean, we'll probably talk about this more next week, but, I mean, surely Drew can't lose the title.
No way.
He surely can't. But, you know, if Rollins loses, who's going to face Drew next? So I'm not quite sure what they're going to do with this match. Maybe they're going to have to do, like, a non-finish, but same applies to Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. I don't see how Strowman can lose the title so, you know, within, you know, 5 weeks of winning it after he waited years to become champion. I haven't quite worked out what they're going to do in these title matches, because the champion cannot lose in either match, but I think the challenger has to be preserved in some way as well, because they don't have many other credible challengers, or indeed any other credible challengers, lined up to challenge Drew or Braun at the subsequent pay-per-view. So they're in a funny position right now, WWE.
Yeah, they are in a weird spot. Speaking of which, the last thing I wanted to bring up, this kind of broke as we were on air, actually, from WrestleVotes again. WrestleVotes say this. I'm just going to ask you, Finn, if there's anything that comes to mind and what you think of this. WrestleVotes said 20 minutes ago, hearing from a few different sources in WWE that they are willing to grant a release to just about anyone who requests one. Basically, what? If a talent wants out, they can go. Will be interesting to see if anyone really does want out, especially during this uncertain time. So, I mean, do you think there's anybody who would kind of go, here's my get out of jail free card if I want to use it? Like, is there anybody who's willing to take that risk in this climate? What do you think?
I mean, I wouldn't have thought so, really, because, I mean, everyone signs and has for decades now signed downside guaranteed contracts. So they are, everyone is being paid. All the people like Kevin Owens, for instance, we haven't seen him since WrestleMania. There's lots of people who are not making appearances right now. They will all be receiving their downside guarantees. So why would they choose to seek a contract release when they are being paid to sit at home? And also, since WWE has just cut or furloughed so many other performers who will also be looking for jobs with the other companies out there, that most of which aren't, you know, none of which are running full schedules right now. It's like, why would you want to be released from WWE at this moment in time when there's so many other people vying for the jobs that you will also be pursuing? So now is not the time to leave WWE when there's so many other people out there on the open market. It's 6 months time or 9 months time or this time next year, that would be different, because if you were to receive a contract release then it'll just be you that's on the open market, or maybe you and a few others who are on the open market, rather than 30 odd wrestlers on the open market looking for jobs that you aren't going to be offered at the moment because the promotions aren't running. So,
I mean, yeah, you're looking at essentially, realistically, you're looking at 12 months from now before you can get a big money deal anywhere, probably.
Yeah.
So really, the only people that I would say this could even affect is maybe somebody who's just signed a 5-year deal. But then, I mean, really, you'd also need to be saying, you know, are you willing to take a year of not being paid? Because, you know, if you look at Kevin Owens as an example, if he's, say he doesn't feel comfortable traveling right now, say that's what that is, then basically has, you know, whatever the time is that he doesn't work is going to be added on to the end of his contract. But then, you know, we don't know, does he get paid now and continues to get paid whatever the extra time is? So it's going to all depend, but I think I'm with you. It would be you'd have to have a lot of money to be able, and then also I think wrestlers want to work most of the time. Like, they don't really want to sit at home for 6 months. Like, they want to work. So I don't think a lot of people will take it up. I think there might be one or two. I don't know who it would be, but it'll be interesting to see if anybody does take them up on it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going from earning a guaranteed salary right now to earning potentially no money. So,
because if you look at, because you know, we talked about if Heath Slater, for example, was in $175,000 a year, he was on more, right? But say you see that as an absolute bare minimum.
Yeah.
After tax, that is $5,000 a week. So you're talking the MD who's, you know, a big name is on at least double, triple that, 10, 15 grand a week to then go to nothing and there's no way to go and make any money anywhere. It's
Why would you do that? And also right now, if you're not on the road, you haven't got any road expenses, you know, which are, if you're one of the lower paid guys, that's like minimum sort of 1,200, 1,300 a week or maybe more than that when you're on the road. So that's a huge saving that you're making because you're not wrestling. So, I mean, this, why would you voluntarily give up a secure and guaranteed income? Why would you do that? Unless you were, I couldn't understand why someone would do it if there was other promotions running right now and there was a definite job offer there that was paying as much or more with, some form of creative input and, you know, more better prospects for advancement than a particular performer has in WWE, but there isn't. So, I mean, why would you choose that option? You're surely going to sit tight and just, you know, be grateful that you're, or be thankful that you've got a guaranteed contract and you're getting a guaranteed income, and your expenses are only your household expenses, not your road expenses as well. So, maybe one or two people will take WWE up on this offer. But I mean, as a business, from a business standpoint, I don't understand why anyone would. From business, it doesn't make any sense for in terms of, you know, it's why take the risk? Why give up that secure income for no income and career uncertainty in the future? When the once everything starts up again, the market is going to be flooded with ex-WWE performers. So getting those, you know, plum indie bookings or, you know, that gig with AEW, there's going to be a lot of people vying for those contracts. So why put yourself in that position now? I can't understand why anyone would do that. I'm sure some will, but I don't think I would if I was working for WWE right now.
Well, that is it for us here on the main podcast. Maybe by next week we'll know more on that stuff. And it'll be I think next week's the go-home week to Money in the Bank. Like Money in the Bank's next weekend.
It is, so. Yeah, May 10th. May 10th, week on Sunday, yes.
Okay, Finn, what are your plugs?
Just Twitter, at Finley Martin. Nothing else to plug. How about yourself, Kenny?
YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for all of our interview content and Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus written content, audio content. Stuff going up most days. So, we want to thank everybody who has pledged for us. I know Finn's got something written going up fairly soon. We've got a Backlash 2000 review this week for the retro content. We've got another TNT podcast, me and Ollie coming, retro, current stuff. It's all happening over there, so patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And we certainly appreciate you continuing to give us your money in these kind of tough times.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we really appreciate your support. Yeah, we absolutely do. So, we will be reviewing Backlash on Thursday. So please check that out.
Check it out. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.